In a time like none of us have experienced before, there's strength to be found in community institutions like Iowa Public Radio. I'm Executive Director Myrna Johnson, and I'm so proud of the thoughtful, informed coverage IPR brings you on the issues that matter. Listener funding is the power source that makes it all possible. Facts, understanding, insight, that's what you fund when you give to this station. Make your gift now at iowapublicradio.org, and thank you.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and today we're going to talk about one of the first flowers we see each spring. They're beautiful, cheerful, and very easy to grow. We're going to learn all about daffodils. Aaron Stile is Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. He is here. Hello, Aaron.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here. And Cindy Haynes is here, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Hello, Cindy.
Good morning, Charity.
And this whole show really grew out of a conversation that you and Aaron had just about how much you love daffodils, right, Cindy?
We decided that we're pretty daffy for daffodils. So we talked forever about daffodils, so we thought maybe we could handle 15 minutes on the radio.
I think you definitely can. And Aaron, of course, at Ryman Gardens, you have daffodils blooming all over the place right now, but they're everywhere. I think everybody loves daffodils. What do you think it is about them that just attracts us so much?
I think, you know, they're big and they're colorful and they come early in the season. And I think all of those things together just make us so happy to see them after a long winter and seeing these bright yellow flowers kind of pop up in the landscape. And across much of the state, this is one of the peak weeks for daffodils for a lot of areas. And so it's just so nice to see them. I think that's one of the biggest reasons
why.
Yeah,
they just make you feel happy, don't they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, Cindy, when I think about daffodils, of course, I think about it's a beautiful yellow flower. But there are multiple varieties of daffodils. And where do they fit in with other flowers?
Right. So daffodils are a type of bulb. So they come from a bulb that you usually plant in the fall before. And as far as the flowers goes and the different cultivars, there are 13 different classes or types of daffodils. And they're sorted into these different classes based on the size of the flower, if it's one flower per stem or multiple flowers per stem, and how long those petals are in comparison to the cup, which is called the corona. So it's a pretty incredible process to actually sort them into these different categories, but it's pretty cool too because we have a lot of popular daffodil cultivars out there from, you know, half a dozen. You'll see half a dozen different classes just in one garden, just because they like daffodils so much.
Well, and I'm not sure all of us would be that discerning when we look at daffodils.
No, we're just buying them because we like that daffodil or we like it. We don't know it's in a different class. But paper whites are in one class of daffodil. The big yellows are in one class of daffodils. And then the little bitty jonquils are in a different class of daffodils. So it's kind of cool to have some from each.
All right. So when I think about daffodils and I'm thinking about those yellow flowers, that doesn't really mm-hmm. cover all the daffodils.
No, it doesn't. So there are some daffodils that are yellow and white. There's orange in some daffodils. There's even kind of a reddish pink that you can get in some daffodils. They're double daffodils where they don't even have the typical cup. There's a split cup daffodil, so it's a double that's kind of opened up. And then there's really funky ones out there, one called hoop petticoat, where the cup looks like a petticoat or a skirt on a stem, basically. So lots of unusual types of daffodils, little ones, tall ones, early ones, later ones. Typically yellow is the common color theme, that cheerful yellow color. But otherwise, it's a little bit variable out there, which is great.
This really makes me want to diversify my daffodils,
yes.
But I am very satisfied with the daffodils that I have. And I mean, Aaron, one of the great things about daffodils is I planted them 10 years ago when I moved into mm-hmm. my house, and they keep showing mm-hmm. up every year,
yes.
And they're just as beautiful every year. So we know that tulips don't quite have that kind of a longevity. You have to replant your tulips more often. Daffodils, mm-hmm. how long do they last?
daffodils are a very long-lived, very reliable perennial in our gardens. And there are many cases where they, as long as they are being treated well, as long as they don't get buried too deep by, you know, construction or excessive mulch or something like that, they will grow and bloom and grow and bloom forever and ever. And the nice thing that's so that makes us like them even more is that they're very resistant to browsing from things like rabbit and deer, which is not the case for tulips. You know, tulips to deer are like chicken nuggets to my kids. daffodils are more like, you know, Brussels sprouts or something like that. And in fact, daffodils are toxic for deer in particular. And so they leave them alone, which is also really wonderful because a lot of us have rabbit and deer pressure and we don't have to worry about them with daffodils.
That is so nice. And daffodils, you see them planted in many different ways in the environment. Cindy, tell me more about some of the different ways that you can incorporate daffodils mm-hmm. into your landscape, because there are just a lot of options.
There are a lot of options. So you can force them. You can grow them in containers and force them to bloom early indoors. I always do a few that way. And then planting them in the landscape, I like planting them in beds or borders, especially near summer blooming perennials or in ground covers or in other places where, you know, in the spring, not everything's awake and kind of emerging yet, because the daffodils, I know, will come up early and explode in this kind of riot of cheerful yellow flowers. So think about planting them in beds and borders where some other things will come up, or you will plant other things later in the season to kind of cover up that hole that the daffodil is going to leave, but that can provide that really early spring bloom.
And it was really popular to try to kind of naturalize daffodils into your landscape. And that can be really, really neat looking, but it also creates some problems with mowing, right?
Right. So you can, there are some really early daffodils that you could plant on a slope, you know, in an on your lawn. But the daffodil foliage is the one thing that I don't like about it. It sticks around a lot longer than many other types of bulb foliage. And it needs to, because we want it to photosynthesize and put energy back into the bulb. But that sometimes means it's around a month after it's done blooming. And if we destroy that foliage or mow it too early, then the longevity of the bulb kind of decreases pretty quickly. So you want to put it in a place where it can continue to have that foliage as long as it needs to, and then you're not pulling it out until, you know, it yellows or it dies. So don't braid it. Don't just leave the foliage alone. Don't tie it up. Just let it look a little messy for that month after it's done blooming.
All right. And if you want them all over your lawn, you just have to realize that you're going to have to deal with that.
Right. You're just going to be a lazy lawn mower. You're going to have really tall grass because you can't mow until after it starts to yellow.
All right. And Aaron, you
said... Sounds like a good excuse,
right,
actually.
My husband has used that, actually, a few times. And Aaron, you mentioned if they're well cared for, is there anything else that we need to talk about? You have to let the foliage last so that the energy can be stored. Is there anything else that we need to know?
The foliage, letting the foliage die back naturally is probably one of the more difficult things to do with this plant, because it does stick around for so long. The other things to consider is you can deadhead. It helps improve the appearance of the plants to remove the spent flowers. Although daffodils, it's not essential that they're deadheaded. They'll be okay if they're not. And they really need to be in well-drained but moist soils. So they do not like heavy, wet conditions like most bulbs. And so if you have a really heavy soil or it's a very wet location, that's probably not the best spot for daffodils. But most average Iowa garden soils, daffodils do quite well in.
All right. And Cindy, we were talking earlier about how deer don't like them because they're toxic. But that also, I had no idea. That's why you usually see daffodils alone in a vase. I thought we just put daffodils alone in a vase because they were the only things blooming.
They often are the only things blooming, but they create kind of a toxic juice or sap, and then it gets into the water, and they will actually kill other flowers eventually that are in the cut vase or vase with them. So they're usually all by themselves, and they need no other companions to be pretty in a cut flower vase.
So, all right. Yep. Well, we are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes to talk more about your plants in your landscape. And Aaron and Cindy will answer your questions about daffodils and anything else you'd like to grow or grow better. With me today, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, along with Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
If you love this podcast and IPR, you probably know that it's fueled by listener dollars. Hi, I'm Rick Brewer, a talk show producer at Iowa Public Radio. And part of my job is connecting with Iowans who have stories to tell. When you contribute to IPR, you help make that possible. Membership contributions make up 57% of IPR's budget. That's huge and amazing. So do your part to support the podcast and programs you enjoy. Go to iowapublicradio.org and tap the red donate button. Thank you.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me to answer all of your questions today, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. And let's go to the phones. Lisa is on the line in Waukee. Hi, Lisa.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Oh, yeah. Hi. I was wondering, I have some knockout rose bushes that I planted several years ago, and I have added one or two to it, the rose since. And it's not, they tend to come up with these little brownish leaves that I think are just not very pretty. Doesn't look like it did when I first planted it. So I'm wondering what I need to do. Do I need to replace them, or is there some other option?
Aaron?
So they emerge with brown leaves, or do the leaves start to brown over the summer season?
Well, they're just kind of starting now, and they're a reddish brown. It's not the pretty green leaves that, you know, you really want.
Sure. So the new growth, and I've noticed this on a lot of roses do this, but knockouts in particular tend to have very reddish new growth. It will eventually green up. In particular, if the plants are in full sun, it should kind of be better. But the new growth is that really kind of dark reddish color often. The other thing, knockout roses are very much advertised as winter hardy, and they are to a certain extent, but this far north in Iowa, we still often see some dieback on these plants, especially if we have a rough winter. And so it's not uncommon for especially the upper portion of the plant to have some damage, and those leaves may come out kind of deformed as a result of that. Occasionally that happens. So you can kind of watch maybe for that, but It's kind of how, you know, that dark reddish color is kind of how they grow. And it's not necessarily anything you're doing wrong. If you're noticing that leaves are browning and falling off, that could be some more of a disease issue. And knockout doesn't have a lot of disease issues, but it still can get some of those in certain situations. So you'll have to keep an eye out for that.
Okay. No, they're not falling off, and I covered them with mulch. And so I think they'll be okay. Just I've trimmed them off as they grow, sort of cockeyed. Sometimes a branch will grow out from the bottom. And just, I guess, doing the best I can to keep them in some sort of a decent-looking shape.
Yeah. Yeah, they can get a little kind of hairy-looking.
Well, Lisa, thanks a lot for your call. You can call 866-780-9100, tweet us at Iowa Public Radio, or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Sherry in Iowa City sent this question, Cindy. She says, I've been vegetable gardening for over 20 years on the same 16 by 32 foot plot of land and amending my soil, mainly with horse manure, after having great gardens for many years, in the last 3 years, I've been plagued by various nematodes, viruses, and fungi. I've decided to let my garden plot rest this year, and I want to plant a cover crop that perhaps would build my soil and rid me of some of these diseases. What would be best to plant, and what should be my timing on completing a cycle and being able to use my plot again next year?
Right. So if you're going to take the whole year to plant a cover crop and just let it kind of go, you could, might even be able to get one or two. So clover is one that's pretty liked. I like it as well because it provides some nitrogen. There's also some nice brassicas, like an oilseed radish, which is a pretty good one that helps break up kind of any compacted soils. What I might suggest is that Sherry go to Iowa State Extension and look for a publication called, you know, short season or cover crops for vegetable production. So maybe there's something that she will find there that will kind of fit in with, you know, when she wants to plant it. Because with any cover crop, you have to time it so that you're planting, it's growing, and then you're essentially stopping it at some point and maybe tilling it under in preparation for the following year. So, and if she has a couple of options, then she can find a place to find some seed as well, because she doesn't need a lot of seed for something so small.
Yeah.
That she can kind of purchase a small amount of seed or maybe even a couple of different things and then start thinking about in the fall and kind of tilling that in so that you can prepare it for next year. I think this is a great idea. So she needs to be doing vegetable gardens in containers this year and letting this go with a cover crop. So sounds like a good gardener.
All right. I was just going to ask if you endorsed the idea, and it sounds like you wholeheartedly endorse it.
I do.
All right. Here's a question from Mike in Boone, Aaron. He says, the ends of all the branches on our four-year-old redbud appear to have been snapped or bitten off. We specifically put up a 5-foot fence around the tree to protect it over the winter. Has some animal gotten to it or just strong winds? And is this serious or a natural pruning?
It's possible that this is deer browsing. They certainly have been known to browse on a wide variety of plants, and redbud could be one of them. If it looks like they've been kind of ripped or kind of tore off instead of really cleanly cut off like a pruners might do, then it almost certainly is deer. For a young tree, it's probably not going to be too bad. If it's really jagged or if it's nowhere near a bud, I might clean it up a little bit just to help the tree kind of recover from it with a nice clean cut that's easy for it to seal off. But otherwise, there's not much you can do about it, but hope for the best. And redbud will recover from this pretty well.
Okay, that's good news. And let's go to the phones. We've got a daffodil question from Colette in Waterloo for you, Cindy. Hi, Colette.
Good morning.
Hi.
Well, here's my question, and it's about the miniature daffodils. Mm-hmm. I just bought a whole flat of them at the garden center, and I'm wondering, is it too early to put them in the ground? Do I have to wait until the frost is past?
You shouldn't have to. These are daffodils that you purchased?
Yeah, so they're blooming the miniature daffodils? Ones, the ones that never get...
Okay, yes.
That's what I call them, miniature daffodils.
Right, and so you can plant them directly in the ground. You're going to make sure you plant them, those bulbs, you know, get them about 6 inches deep. So they're probably, and be very careful in planting them. You can also wait if they're blooming and wait to plant them after they're done blooming. That might make it a little bit easier to plant them.
And you can enjoy those blooms in your house, right?
Right. So you can enjoy those blooms wherever you want. I mean, on your patio, in your house, whatever, and then plant them outside after that. And then know that you can enjoy those blooms next year. Because they're miniature daffodils, I would make sure I would put them in a place where they can be seen. So think about what other plants you have around and what other plants are coming up or blooming right now, because you want to make sure that it's, you know, it's not another shrub that's coming up that's going to kind of overtake this daffodil while it's blooming. That's the other thing. And miniatures sometimes get lost if they're in between daylilies or other things that, kind of overtake that area, especially at bloom time.
All right. Colette, thank you so much for your call. Everett is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Everett.
Hi, good morning. Well, as everyone else, we've lost our trees in our yard, and especially our front yard. And one of them was a hard maple, and was very sad because my father-in-law and I planted that, and he's since deceased. But my wife wants to know about an evergreen, like an evergreen tree. Now, this would be on the north side in front of our house. What would you recommend?
Aaron?
I think for evergreen, you know, there are not a lot of evergreens that really thrive in Iowa. There are several that will tolerate things okay, but things like Colorado spruce sometimes over time develop a lot of disease issues. If you're looking for a large tree, I would look at white pine as my first choice, and then potentially something like Serbian or Norway spruce. Because they tend to be the least impacted by a lot of disease.
Because it's fairly close to a flower bed that she's got.
Okay, so knowing that, I would look at some arborvitae, different types of arborvitae, or upright junipers. And if you have a lot of deer pressure, I'd lean away from the arborvitae and lean more towards the juniper. Okay, so either of them could be good options then.
Okay, all right. I think my wife's going to copy all that down, and I appreciate it. You folks have a good day.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, and good luck with that. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And let's go next to Jan in Muscatine. Hi, Jan.
Good morning. Thank you for your program.
Sure. What's your question?
I have a couple questions about garden pests. One is we have chipmunks in our yard, and we've had them before, but we've always had pets, and we don't have any pets now. So the chipmunk is kind of digging under around our porch and under our air conditioner, and I don't want it to do any damage to our, you know, foundation or things like that. So, but I don't want to poison them. I just want to discourage them from digging around the house. And I just don't know how to do that humanely.
All right. Well, this may be a little outside of our expertise here. Cindy, do you want to tackle that?
Well, I always have problems with chipmunks in the spring digging up anything that I recently potted. So they are always digging up, you know, new pots or new plants that I put on the deck or something. What I typically do to kind of discourage them, because I'm the same way, I don't want to, I don't even want to use a friendly trap on them because they're not so much of a nuisance later in the season, is just kind of put some rocks around those areas that they're trying to dig, some bigger rocks if you can, some river rock or some bigger rocks, just so that you can say, okay, I'm encouraging you to try digging somewhere else. If that doesn't work, then you probably are going to have to move, try and think about maybe moving them to another location. And that usually requires a friendly trap. And I would say that would also require calling someone about what to do to put in that friendly trap to attract them, because I have no idea what chipmunks eat. I don't know about you guys. Aaron, do you have any idea?
I would say, I'm not sure what the best bait would be for a live trap, but the rock idea is a good one. And if it also works for that area, laying and pinning down either chicken wire or hardware cloth over the areas that they're digging can also discourage them from being in that area. And if you get like the plastic coated wire, it almost disappears. You don't even see it. So that can be another option depending on the setting that might work well to discourage that digging.
And it's usually just temporary. So usually this isn't something that goes on all summer long. So if you can just have it there for maybe a month, you'll probably notice that they've moved on to something else, and you can live happily with chipmunks again.
All right, Jan, I hope that helps. And let's do one more email question here before the break. Jim in Colo says, I'd like to treat two ash trees for emerald ash borer with the Bare Advanced product that I pour around the tree base, but they're within 18 to 25 feet from an apple tree. What's the minimum distance that I should have between a treated ash tree and a fruit tree that I'd like to be able to harvest? Aaron, do you know?
That's probably, depending on the size of the two trees, that's probably a little bit too close. Remembering anything that you put down is going to impact any plant that's growing in that area. And it's likely that the canopy or the root system of that apple tree is within the root system of that ash that close. Depending on the size of the apple tree, I mean, we typically say that about at least 50% larger than the canopy of the tree is going to be where the roots are. Although when the tree is really big, it's maybe not quite that much, but that might be a good rule of thumb. So if you have this tree that's 10 foot across, then you're probably going to want to be at least the canopy, that is, you're probably going to be at least 15 to 20 feet away.
All right. So that is a challenge in this situation. Mm-hmm. And of course, emerald ash borer is a challenge that most of us in Iowa are facing. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. With me today, Aaron Style, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, and Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. You can join the conversation with your questions. Talk of Iowa at iowapublicradio.org is our email address. This is Talk of Iowa.
The legislative session is scheduled for 110 days. And there will be hundreds of bills proposed this year.
I would like to call the subcommittee meeting to order.
From subcommittees to committees.
I really want to support this bill.
To the chamber floor.
Every senator has voted. The secretary will close the voting system.
Our weekly podcast, Under the Golden Dome, walks you through the legislative process. I'm John Pimple. Subscribe to Under the Golden Dome with your podcast listening program or hear it at iowapublicradio.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Aaron Style, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. They are here to answer your questions. You can email talkofiowa at iowapublicradio.org. You can call 866-780-9100. Let's get back to the phones. Linda is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Linda.
Hi, how are you doing, Charity?
Great. What's your question?
Well, I'm a mushroomer, a morel mushroom, and I have seen a lot of controlled burn woods around the town, and I'm wondering if mushroom would survive the burn and maybe thrive if I can hunt in those areas.
Cindy, what do you think?
Oh, that's a really good question, and I'm not sure I know. I was on a video call with Lena just this week, and she was saying there's not a lot of morels up just yet because we're waiting for some rain. If they could survive, the burn, I think that they would more likely to survive it in that kind of dormant state. But I'm not sure. I'm guessing with all that organic matter that has been burnt, that might be a good place to hunt maybe next year. Maybe next year, so that kind of turned into some nice organic matter. However, the authority on this one is going to be Lena at the Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic, so I'm going to have to defer to her, I think.
All right. Well, and you can find out how to contact the Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic if you just type those words into your search engine. They're easy to find, trust me. So Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic. And Lena Salamanca Rodriguez is the person to ask for. But Lena is easiest to remember probably there. So good luck with that, Linda. Thanks a lot for your call. And Fran is up next in Ames. Hi, Fran.
My question is, what depth and temperature should I be looking for before scattering crabgrass germination inhibitor fertilizer here in the Ames area?
Aaron?
So usually we're looking for soil temperatures to be 55 or above, and often most years that coincides with the flowers of forsythia falling off of the shrub. So that can help you kind of get the timing right. If you put it down too early, it often washes away before it can be effective. If you put it down too late, the seed has germinated and it won't be effective either. So that's kind of the temperature you're looking for. And it often, it's going to be in the next couple of weeks that applying it, it's going to be appropriate. Because forsythia in many areas is starting to bloom right now.
5 degrees.
I'm sorry, Fran, what did you say?
At what depth should I be looking for that 55 degrees?
It's the kind of the top couple of inches of the soil. Iowa State University on the has a soil temperature map. It kind of gives you a good idea of, I think it's at 4 inches is where they measure that soil temperature. So because other things, especially agronomic wise, are put down at certain soil temperatures too. So they provide that resource and it can be a good way to get a good idea of what it might be in your area.
All right. And we were just talking about the website where you can go last week on the show, and I'm looking for it right now. But Cindy, do you know?
It's called MesoNet. MesoNet. Okay. M-E-S-O-net.
M-E-S-O.net.
Yes, I think so. Or MesoNet. It's from the Department of Agronomy at Iowa State University, and it does that 4-inch depth soil temperatures all over the state.
Yes, MesoNet, no dot, M-E-S-O-N-E-T, and that will get you there, and you don't have to take your own soil temperatures, which is a really great thing. All right, here's a question, Aaron, from Steve in Mason City. How do I take care of this amaryllis? There are only 2 32-inch stalks remaining after spectacular, long-lived 8 blooms have wilted.
No, yeah, so to hold on. Yeah, it is. That sounds really wonderful, actually. To hold on to those plants, you're going to deadhead them. So remove that flower stalk, but leave the leaves. Most people have the best success by keeping the plants indoors until the danger of frost has passed, putting it in a part sun location outside, watering and fertilizing kind of on a regular basis throughout the summer months. Then bringing it in before the threat of frost comes in the fall, letting the foliage die back naturally by withholding water, and then that will put it into a dormancy, and then you'll want it to be dormant for, I think it's about 8 weeks, and then you can start watering again, and you should see a flower. The important part about this is regular watering and fertilizing through the spring and summer months to help build up that bulb so that it has enough energy to create a new flower stalk while it's dormant. And this is a plant that goes through dormancy based on water restrictions, not on temperature. So it should still be cool though. Kind of upper 50s, low 60s is ideal to help with the dormancy, but it does not need to be cold like our tulips.
All right, and let's go. Oh, he has one more question. Sorry. He also wants to know what soil tests might be useful in a home garden and how do you do that? Aaron?
So there are a couple of resources available where you can send in soil samples to private laboratories. This isn't a service that's offered at Iowa State University anymore, but it is something that you can send in to private laboratories. And most of them have a garden kind of soil test that tests for things like pH, the amount of nitrogen, organic content, some of those things that are really important to most gardeners. And so kind of searching out some of those laboratories, they'll tell you how to collect the sample and sending it in for a garden soil test is probably your best bet.
All right. And Barb is on the line next in Ames with a service berry question for you, Cindy. Hi, Barb.
Mm-hmm. Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
My question is, I have some City Line Paris hydrangeas. I bought one and it was blooming 1 year, 2 more the next year and they were blooming, and they've continued to bloom off every other year. I had a question about that. And then my service berry has a fungus. It wasn't identified what kind. I was wondering if there's any suggestions on how to deal with that.
Okay, so what kind of hydrangeas did you say you have? Because I missed what you said. Which hydrangeas?
City Line Paris.
Okay. So this is a panicle hydrangea that blooms later in the season, or one of the pink or blue ones that bloom mid-season?
It blooms earlier in the season.
Okay.
And it's not one of the pink or blue ones.
Okay. So, and that's good, because sometimes those pink or blue ones are kind of unreliable for blooming because they're somewhat marginally hardy and bloom mostly on old wood and sometimes on new wood. The other hydrangeas typically bloom on new wood, with the exception of maybe the Annabelle hydrangeas. And if you're giving them, you know, a couple of hours of sun, kind of moist, well-drained soils, and you're pruning like in early spring or pruning right after they're done blooming, they should be okay. Avoid over-fertilizing them, making sure you keep any kind of nitrogen fertilizers kind of out of that area. They don't need a lot of fertilizer to bloom really well. So it's a really pretty adaptable species. Those others are pretty adaptable, pretty easy to grow, and thrive a little bit on neglect. So maybe that's one of the things that I would recommend for the hydrangeas to keep them blooming and blooming well.
Okay.
So then the serviceberry question.
And then the serviceberry question is, where's the fungus? Is it on the bark, or is it on the fruit or the leaves?
It's on the leaves. So some of the leaves get kind of yellowish with brown speckles, and some of them get like just brown spots on them. They seem to be healthy. This has been going on for a couple of years.
Right. So this might be, serviceberry likes to grow in kind of part shade and does pretty well in part shade, still blooms well and still produces fruit. But maybe part of the problem here is it's getting a little too much shade, or it doesn't have enough airflow around it. So something you could do is maybe do a little bit of a light pruning so that you can allow more airflow through the shrub, and maybe a little more light to penetrate into the canopy as well. I might also, if you are harvesting fruits off of this one, so it's really important, you might consider using a fungicide early in the season, especially when if it's a really wet spring. But otherwise, serviceberry, once again, is pretty tough and pretty durable. And if it's not impacting the fruit set that you want to get, and it's still fall coloring well and still flowering well in the spring, this just may be something that's kind of a site-specific and weather-specific, so it might be bad one year and not be a problem at all the next.
All right, Barb, thank you so much for your call. And we've got about a minute and 10 seconds left, so lightning round questions here. Aaron K. says, a rabbit jumped over my inadequate fence and chewed all the bark off my 3-year-old oak tree, leaving about 4 inches. Should I replant, or can I let a sprout take over and regrow?
I would replant.
Okay. And Cindy, Russ says, I've planted about 8 tomato plants in the same area for the last 2 summers. Will they do poorly if I plant tomatoes again this year, or do I need to rotate my crops?
Oh, definitely rotate your crops. You don't want to have those problems that could come. And it's like fingers crossed at this point.
All right. Especially after 2 years, right?
Yes. Especially after 2 years.
All right. Good job on the lightning round. Cindy Haynes, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Aaron Style, thank you.
You're welcome.
Enjoy all those daffodils at Ryman Gardens. Aaron Style is Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. We'll be back again next Friday with Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Brilliant novels, groundbreaking nonfiction, evocative poetry, great books, and insightful conversations whenever you want them on the Talk of Iowa Book Club podcast. Pick the books that speak to you or read them all. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.